Such a pleasure this evening to have Sylvia give the talk. She is someone for whom we need no introduction, but I was just reflecting during the day and also during Zazen, sort of where Sylvia has been for me, and you know, we each have our own relationship, but where she's been for me really from the get-go throughout my Zen career. I arrived at Kanan Do, I tripped down that step early one morning, and probably 1992 or three, and Sylvia was there, and she was always there, and she taught me Orioke. I will never forget her teaching me Orioke, just totally in silence. We sat side by side, but just very precise, very clear. It was a wonderful experience, and my mind is going, what? I have to do what? And she is just going. So I'm delighted to have Sylvia share with us this evening her Dharma. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jill. I do remember teaching you Orioke, and then you taught me sewing. Well, good evening, everybody. Misha asked me to give a talk, and she hinted that I should talk about why I want to be a priest. So I'm going to dedicate this talk to Misha, my teacher. She has always been there for me. In the early days of when I first showed up at Kanan Do in 1989, it was around January, February. She was there, and she was my role model, and she's been the constant thread, actually, through my many years of wandering around the forest. So now I find myself in my life, in this life, willing to become a Soto Zen priest, a novice. It's going to be a novice. Kathleen, my Dharma sister, and I are going to do this weekend, Saturday. And this is a huge step. I mean, this is really important for my karma, as well as everyone else, all beings. And I don't think I've ever heard anyone talk about all the lectures I've heard, talk about why they wanted to become a Soto Zen priest. You know, and Suzuki Roshi, he would say that, you know, we're not in America, we're not monks and we're not priests. I mean, we're not, you know, there's this kind of, they were still trying to figure this out in the early, or the late 60s, early 70s, when this is all beginning to take root in America, our practice. I went to Japan in 1983. When I was young, I was restless. I wanted to travel. I was going to go to China, and then I decided, nope, there was too much unrest in China at the time, or something was going on, I can't recall, and I decided I'll go to Japan first. And at the time, I was employed full-time, and I had enough vacation time, and I was able to take off about a month and a half. I had a very benevolent employer. Off I went. And I took with me a book called The Empty Mirror. I think I still have it. And I was reading it. In those days, you know, there was no... You had to take a physical book with you. You couldn't, it was no iPhone or Kindle. And I was still exploring Buddhism and Confucianism. And a social worker at work had introduced me to, had told me about Tassajara, which I had never heard about before, and recommended this book when she found out I was going to Japan. So nevertheless, I knew that if I was persistent enough, I could stay at a Buddhist temple, but I had to be persistent. So in Kyoto, three times I went back to the tourism center. And I said, I really want to stay at a Buddhist temple. And twice they said, no, you can't do that. You know, the third time I went back and the fellow went into the back room and he made a phone call and then he said, okay, I guess I was sincere enough in his eyes. So off I went to a place called Mount Koyo, the Shingon site of the Shingon sect of Buddhism, and stayed there for 3 days. And I mean, I really wasn't part of the monk practice. I was there as a guest, and they gave me this wonderful room. It was just amazing. But I remember looking out the window of my room into this beautiful, beautiful courtyard and saying to myself that as an American and as a woman, that I don't think I could ever penetrate this practice, that there was a barrier that I could not be able to enter into this way. And I just felt very sad about this. Boy, did I not know the path that I would take. So when I came back, I found out about San Francisco Zen Center, and I found out about Zen groups. And I thought, well, I'll have to look into this. This is what it's like going down this road, down this path. You know, there are different signposts as you go along. You know, there's a sign pointing, you know, this way. You meet people, you know, and you think, well, and of course, I never really trusted institutions or, you know, organized religion and all this. And no one was going to tell me what to do. But there was something that was needing to be fulfilled inside me. And so I walked into Kanando and had this incredible feeling that this is where I belonged, that I had found what I was looking for. I don't, cannot really describe it. And I said, well, you're going to have to trust this. You know, you're going to have to go with this. And and it wasn't the teacher, and it wasn't, you know, it was being there that was saying, you need to really get into this. Well, so there I was, and I kept coming back. So anyway, as I went along, I kept saying, you gotta just keep hanging in there with this. because you're on the right path. And I eventually, well, I went off to Tassajara for 3 months and studied at Tassajara with Mel Weitzman. And then I went up to San Francisco Zen Center and I studied with Blanche Hartman. And I was lay ordained by her. This was way back in 1991. And I was still very involved with my career and, you know, I had lay ordination. When I was at Tassajara, I knew that I had to take the vows, become lay ordained. It was important to me to take those vows in this lifetime. So lo and behold, there I am, you know. And, but there was something missing. There was something, it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't enough, you know, it was, there was something else, there was something that was missing. And I really, really cannot explain this. It's being attracted to something, yearning for something, and knowing it's there, but thinking that I would never, ever be able to truly be a part of or immersed in. So I had had other opportunities, but didn't pursue it. So I asked Misha if I could be ordained as a priest, and she said, yes. And I thought, oh, all right. Well, you know, it's one thing to just say, okay, you know, but then there's another thing about trying to figure out, what is this really about? I don't want this to be a feather in my cap. You know, I don't want this to be, oh, look at me. I don't want that at all. And there's more to it when one becomes a priest. You know, it's another step, but it's actually kind of a stepping down as well. You know, I've thought about this life, and it's going to be a life of renunciation. It's a vow of devotion to this practice, to Soto Zen, and to Dogen and Suzuki Roshi, to Les Kay, to Mel Weitzman, Blanche Hartman, and of course, Misha. That I will make this personal commitment to be a caretaker for the Soto Zen way of life. You know, I want to serve Soto Zen. I want to serve the Buddha and the Dharma and of course the Sangha. And this will be a primary goal in my life. And I'm going to have to give my hair up. You know, in Japan, I think everybody shaves their head. But in America, the men get to shave their head completely. And the women, we have to have our hair very short. And it's very symbolic of giving something up, renouncing vanity, pronouncing, for me, this is my interpretation. Other people have other interpretations. It's symbolic of also leaving home, because in the ceremony, it's called Tukido. Shuke Tukido, leaving home and attaining the way. And I think about, well, you know, if I were to go to a monastery, I would still have a home. So I'd be living in the monastery. Well, in my everyday life here in San Jose, I have a home, but as a priest, my home will be wherever I am at that moment. I could be anywhere. That will be my home. So in a sense, it's very symbolic about leaving home, and it's attaining the way. So it's all wrapped up in this commitment and this devotion to the practice and being a caretaker. So I'm going to be ordained as this novice priest. I'll be a novice. Essentially, I'm starting all over again. And I will be, Misha even used the word baby Buddha. Kathleen and I are going to be baby Buddhas. I'm going to be starting all over again. This is going to be a whole new adventure. I'm going to have to be flexible. I'm going to have to be ready to learn new things, how to do things. I'm going to have to be a caretaker for the rituals and the ceremonies. And this has always been very important to me. We chant and we offer incense and food and flowers, and we do all this, and we do it for a reason. It helps us. It helps us express our feelings. You know, it's a lattice for us to hang our feelings, our experiences. And I think most people can recognize this. So I'm going to become, as Norman Fisher says, an archetype. I'm going to have to embrace this archetype. I'm going to be wearing these robes, and I will be a symbol. Okay. So this is going to be a responsibility. Excuse me. You know, I'm going to have on clothing, a kimono from Japan that will represent the Japanese tradition, and then the corona, which is the Chinese. And then we have the okeso, which of course is the robe, Shakyamuni. And it's just full of tradition, and the ceremony is, of course, very symbolic and metaphorical and quite meaningful. And there'll be a shift. There will be a shift. But I truly do not want to be arrogant. This is a stepping down. Suzuki Roshi used to talk about lowering the mast of the ego. Well, I got to really lower it after I get all dressed up like this. And yeah, I'm going to need all of you to keep me from getting, you know, carried away. So I don't want to get carried away. This is something that has drawn me for so many years, and I don't know why. You know, Mel Weitzman, he was asked by Suzuki Roshi. Well, Suzuki Roshi said to him, well, I think it's time for you to become a priest. And Mel said, well, okay. He said, well, what does that mean? And Suzuki Roshi said, I don't know. So we went to Katagiri Roshi, and Katagiri Roshi at the time was at living at San Francisco Zen Center, and he went to Katagiri, and he says, well, you know, what does this mean to become a priest? And Katagiri said, I don't know. Wouldn't you know? I mean, this is it, right? This is the way of Zen, where, you know, you're dealing with all these kind of paradoxes and koans. So later on in years, Mel Weissman was asked again, you know, what does it mean to be a priest? And he said, you know, I don't know, and I hope I never find out. This is a big koan. You know, when I knew I was going to talk about this, I thought, well, what the heck am I going to say? Because this is a koan. This path that I'm on is my koan. And I truly want this, but I'll be damned if I know why. You know, it's about taking refuge in the three treasures and caring for them, supporting my teacher, Misha, and you guys. Truly, truly. I will be a caretaker. And when I put on these robes, I feel as if the arms of the ancestors, all of them, are hugging me. They will be supporting me. And, you know, I will be truly humbled and honored It comes with tremendous responsibility and tremendous karma. I'm looking at my notes here. So what I want to do is help this practice of Soto Zen, help Dogen bring this practice into the 21st century, into our everyday lives here at this time, because it's incredibly important. Again, it will be a privilege, and I want to have that feeling of humility all the time. And I know that attaining this way is going to, I mean, it's going to have its ups and downs. I know Kathleen and I are going to be wrestling with these robes, all this material, and learning how to do all this. And, you know, I said to Misha, I said, why? I just want to do a good job. And Jill's a role model as well. People have gone down this path before me, before Kathleen and I. And what a privilege to have Kathleen doing this with me. We're going to make it. It also, I don't have some sort of special gift, and I don't have an elevated status. Jaku Kintz gave a lecture once about being a priest. She's with the Ocean View or Oceanside Zen Center, in I think it's in Santa Cruz or Aptos. And she said, you know, priests don't have some sort of special knowledge or special gift, or, you know, we're equal. We're equal with everybody. And I would like to think that I'm going to be trying to lower my ego all the time. Absolutely. So I'm going to try to express in this world what it means to follow the Buddha's path and the precepts, to live my life with devotion, living a life of vow. And Blanche Hartman said, living a life of vow, living a life of faith and devotion. And boy, that's a big ticket, isn't it? And you think, well, gee, I don't want to mess this up. So I'm going to undergo this training. I sincerely want to do a good job. I want to support the teachings, as I said, the Dharma and of course, the Sangha, all of you. This isn't about me. It isn't about, I want this and I want that. And I. When I wanted to be lay ordained, I thought, well, I really want this. I mean, this is about me. I want to do this. This is about, I need to express this. This is about me. This time, this ordination, this is not about me. This is about you, you guys. This is about all other beings. Sylvia Hawley is not really in the equation here. This is about me trying my best to bring compassion into the world in wherever I am. That will be my home every moment, even if I'm driving down 280. I used to wash dishes with Lou Hartman when I was doing sashins at San Francisco Zen Center. Lou Hartman was the husband of Blanche Hartman. And he was the kind of priest that he was always going around in the background taking care of things. He was in there in the kitchen washing dishes. Nobody asked him. He would just go in there and wash the dishes. And I admired him. I really did. Quietly taking care of whatever needed to be taken care of. When you become a priest, you take the garbage out and you clean the toilets. It's the kind of things you do, because you're taking care of stuff. Doesn't matter what it is. When Norman Fisher showed up to the Berkeley Zen Center for the first time, he shows up and there's this guy, the guy in the garden, and he's sweeping and he's weeding. And Norman said, hello, we're, I'm here. I'm introducing myself. I would like to find out about Berkeley Zen Center. And Norman thought that he was the gardener, this guy. It was Mel Weitzman, who was the abbot. And they're my role models, I'll tell you. I may be dressing up and looking the part, but I truly, truly want to have the humility to realize that this is karmically, and this is such a privilege to be able to do this. And then I want this to come from my heart. And I'm hoping that all of you will call me on whatever if I get out of hand. um, Anyway, it's hard to put this into words. I've been thinking about it. I am drawn to this, and I feel that this is something in me that wants to be expressed, and I'm following along. I think last week, I think the joy began to seep in. You know, Blanche Hartman, when she was ordained, she had her head shaved, and she was proud of her shaved head. And she told Richard Baker that, and he said, nope. No. You can't be proud of your bald head. And what was he telling her? He was telling her, hey, you know, don't let your ego get carried away here. So anyway, I think that about does it. If you guys have any questions, you can ask me. I'll ask them as best I can. It's going to be a privilege and an honor. And anyway, thank you.